The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, March 14th, 2008, and this is episode number 118. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to bring you the best, the absolute very best in MotoGP podcasting and reporting and all that good stuff. We have a ridiculously long show today, so I'm going to keep the intro very, very short, and we're going to jump right in. We've got a couple of calls with Liam Schubert, our man in Spain, working for the Dantine team. Now, these calls were done by Jules Cisek. So it's Jules and Liam talking, and Jules caught up with Liam a couple of times there in Qatar after the practice sessions, and then again after the race. So we've got quite a bit of conversation with Liam going on in three separate sort of chunks. And then Jules and I did a call that just got way out of hand, and talking for about an hour about the Qatar race, because as you know, the season has begun, the season's in full swing. I think we had a very good race there in Qatar, certainly the best Qatar race that I've seen. It was very, very interesting stuff. There's a lot to talk about, and like I said, we're just going to jump right on into it and get that call going on with Jules here very, very shortly. Before I do that, I do have to send a big giant shout out to a couple of donations through MotoGPOD that are very, very gratefully appreciated. And one of these is from Lee Lipinski, longtime friend of MotoGPOD. Met Lee at last year's Laguna Seca race and chatted with him a little bit and everything. And we've exchanged emails here back and forth. Real nice guy. And he sent in a donation. I do appreciate that, Lee. And the other one is from the speedfiends.com motorcycle gear store, an online motorcycle goodies store that you can go to. It's Speed Fiends, and it's speed, of course. And then Fiends is spelled F-E-E-N-Z, speedfiends.com. And they have some pretty good deals going on there. So big thanks to Speed Fiends. This is their second donation / advertisement, really. And they said that they got some response from you guys out there, you listeners that checked out speedfiends.com. So I appreciate that to Speed Fiends, and I appreciate that to you guys, the listeners out there, that you're going to support the guys that support MotoGPOD. Got a whole lot of email this last week. Been trying to keep up on it. I think I was doing a pretty good job. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to share a lot of it with you because we just have such a ridiculously long show. So why don't we just go ahead and jump right into this call that Liam did with Jules. This is after the Friday practice sessions that they had going on there in Qatar. And Jules had a few quality issues going on. I think it's still acceptable, and there's some really good information. And he apologized for that, and he's going to make sure it never happens again. We put the big smack down on Jules. But it is difficult, honestly, to do these calls sometimes with Skype, especially Liam was in Qatar at the time. So you've got a whole different host of bandwidth issues and all that sort of goodness. I'm sure he had a pretty decent internet connection, but there's so many things that can affect it. So whatever, take a listen to this.
Okay, we have Liam Schubert on the call here on Skype, and he's in Qatar right now, and it's, 3:11 over there, huh, in the morning?
Yeah, just past 3 a.m. Hello, everybody in MotoGP land.
I noticed that the temperature got down pretty low during free practice. How you guys, how bad was it?
Well, I wouldn't say it was that bad. We managed to wear shirts most of the time, rather than having to put on a sweater or a vest, but we could have used them. I think temperatures got to about 16 degrees Celsius, which is roughly high 60s.
Right.
So 68, 69 degrees. Not exceptionally low, but obviously Bridgestone tires work better in hot conditions. You know, it's based upon their circuits like Sepang and Motegi. The really hot races, the Bridgestones always did well.
Well, one guy's doing pretty well on those Bridgestones.
Yeah, but he's on another level.
Yeah. Your guys are having a little bit of trouble. What's going on? Can you tell us?
Let's see. If I had to say why we were doing bad, I don't think necessarily that we're doing horrible. We managed to come in 18th today. So you know, and sometimes I really wish Chuck and Kenny and the rest of the guys were still here.
Oh, don't say it.
Someone to race around with.
Yeah.
That I wish Tech 3 was still on Dunlop. But obviously Tech 3 with the Michelins is working really, really well right now. And I would say Michelin is working really well. And
definitely.
Randy Mamola brought up a good point earlier this week when he said Michelin can obviously still make tires overnight. And from the last test we did last week, they could obviously make new tires completely based on all that data and ship in fresh tires for this race. So definitely I think Michelin's a step up for this weekend. But on the flip side, Stoner's, you know, riding on a different level. So he's going to be up for a good fight. I think it's going to be really interesting, particularly because all the rookies that are on either satellite teams, factory teams, all the rookies are on Michelins, and they're really bringing it. You look at the pace of some of these guys like Toseland or Lorenzo. Lorenzo in particular today was amazing.
He was basically the fastest guy except on the straight. Because every time he came out of I-3, he was like 0.2 of a second faster than Stoner.
Everybody losing time in Section 3 and not really making time in Section 4. You can make time in 1 and 2. Section 3, you kind of hold even where you lose time. And Section 4, you basically hold even.
I see.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a question of focus on the backside of the track or if the conditions are slightly different out there. But that's what I noticed among all the riders. 1, 2, okay. 3, not so good. 4, just kind of okay.
Got it. Yeah, and actually, you know, the thing is, he was very, very consistent in general, Lorenzo.
Yeah.
He's gonna bring it.
He's got an excellent track engineer and good people around him. They obviously want him to do well. And you'll notice the Michelin track engineer that's working with him is the former Valentino track engineer. So he's got some really strong people around him. I don't know if anybody's done any research on his chief mechanic, Ramon Fancata, but he's got an excellent history and a lot of race wins himself. So, you know, he's got a complete package. He's got a factory bike that's working well. He's got a reinvigorated, reinvested Michelin behind him.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll see what he's going to do on Sunday. It'd be, I guess, the first time since Biaggi if a rookie was to win a Grand Prix race in the Premier class in his first race. I don't think anyone's done that since Biaggi in, what, 98?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So
that would be
years.
Something. That would be something.
And on a Yamaha. So that's a neat little tidbit.
Well, Biaggi was in the Yamaha then too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet. Who do you think is going to figure in this race?
Let's see. Definitely Casey's going to be there. I still kind of wonder if Valentino's holding back a little bit, personally.
You seem to be doing okay during the first practice.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to say who's actually going to bring it in the race because, one, it'll be a new thing for the rookies to really qualify in the heat of the moment and know that, I've got one shot at this lap and then I've got to get back into the garage, change tires, and I got a second crack at it, and whether or not people will get blocked. I mean, it's a little bit a matter of luck, and I'm sure experience will come into play when it comes to qualifying. And then the race is always a little different. You know, Pedrosa came in really strong a few years ago, right off of two consecutive 250 world championships. And while he was immediately fast, you know, and he would ramp up through the practice sessions and did pretty well in qualifying, his first races were a little shakier as he found his ground. You know, it seemed like he would get pushed around the circuit a little bit easier when the other riders got close to him in his early races with the big boys. And we might see the same thing happening with the 250 guys that have moved up.
You think they're going to be...
We might see the 250 guys get back into their same mode of gameplay where they go really close and they, you know, training paint and just like they do in the 250 class. So we might see a repeat of that kind of action.
Man, I would love to see a little battle between Dovi and Lorenzo.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be there. I got to mention for the podcast listeners, that Jules and I are having a video call for the first time. And Jules is watching me have a cigarette and enjoy a nice cold Foster's beer.
Right. I'm at work. I have to hide out.
The coworkers know what you're up to.
Yeah. So, all right. So you've got it's you guys are up again tomorrow, and then qualifying is at 10 p.m.
No, it should be at 11 p.m. local time, or at 10:55, something like that.
Right. That's right. That's what it is. And then, yeah, that's right, because we have daylight savings time coming in on Sunday, so we're going to be watching the race at 1 p.m., which is very nice. I think it's the first time I'm going to be watching a MotoGP race live in the middle of the day.
Huh. Well, don't It'll bet anybody treat. Money, because I'm sure it'll be delayed by a few seconds.
Nice. Well, tell me what you think about the lights and stuff. It looks really cool on the video.
Yeah, actually, the lights itself—it's a pretty magnificent setup. I mean, the way it is, the lights are spread out; they're all aimed at the circuit. I haven't seen any satellite footage yet, which I was really hoping to see, because apparently you can see it from space. I just haven't been able to get a hold of a photo.
Oh, wow, that'd be cool.
It's strange because it's such a good technology in place. But the circuit is in the desert, so instead of having these light poles mounted, you know, to concrete or mounted to something nice, they're just, you know, kind of set into the rocky desert ground with a little concrete foundation, and it's like someone went and dug a hole and planted a light in the middle of the desert and then just put up a lot of them. It's a little strange, I gotta admit, but it works well. I mean, it's really bright.
Have you been out on the track? Have you gotten out there at night?
Yeah, it's cool. I mean,
I was reading a lot about this
idea. I just wish it was warmer. You know, it's an unusual condition to be racing in cooler temperatures. I never really liked it that much. And the track, you know, obviously because it's in the desert, there's a bunch of wind. And in between the test and the race, there was quite a couple of windy days, so it blew a whole bunch of crap back onto the racetrack. And I thought the times from today were actually going to be slower because I thought the track would be pretty dirty for a while, but it cleaned up pretty quickly, and the guys started setting hot laps. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the pole position record broken tomorrow night.
Even in the cold temperatures, huh?
Yeah, even in the colder temperatures, because there's just, you know, everything's advancing. The crush of technology is making things advance.
Definitely. Hey, what do you know about this Danny Pedrosa smacking the back of Rossi thing? What the heck happened there?
Well, it looked like Rossi backed off the throttle and Pedrosa was closing in on him really fast, maybe 20 miles an hour faster than him. It's something I would expect to see more in a race situation rather than a practice. You don't normally have two guys running that close, that hot. But definitely it was a little strange because you typically don't back off the throttle at that position in a corner. I don't see how it could have been intentional in any way. I mean, you can't really see who's behind you unless the pit board guy set it up. But I don't know. It was just a funky fluke thing. The bummer is that Pedrosa has re-injured his hand, and I don't think he's going to be racing.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I think he re-broke his hand.
Holy shit. Wow.
Can you say holy shit on the podcast?
I just did.
It's for adults only.
I have not heard that yet. That's really bad news.
Well, if it's true, I don't know yet. I mean, that's just what I've heard.
Man.
Be interesting to see what Kawasaki and Suzuki can do too, because they're looking a little bit shaky themselves.
Yeah, Westy went down at one point. I didn't really see how he went down. I just saw the aftermath.
It was a little baby high side.
A little baby one. There's no such thing as a baby high side.
Yeah, sure there is. There's the baby ones, and then there's the big ones.
Yeah, the flight.
You gotta have a big one. There must be a balance. It must be a baby one. Anyway, I'm excited for the racing to start. I think the preseason was far too long, too many hours running around racetracks. I think it's time to put up and just get down to some racing.
Believe me, we all share that sentiment. I mean, it was like World Superbike kind of filled in the hole for a little bit. There was some good racing there, but it's MotoGP, you know?
No, I got to admit, though, Superbike has definitely been very entertaining to watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Quite happy watching that. Oh, how about Daytona's this weekend, too, huh?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'll catch that on the replay.
Yeah, I guess if I had to make a choice on Sunday at 1 o'clock what to watch, it definitely wouldn't be the AMA. I mean, nothing against the AMA, but...
It's the opener.
Well, maybe nothing, I don't know.
This is a historic race. It's going to be fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, did they mention who bought them out yet? Who bought the promotional rights?
Actually, I saw that there was a thread on one of the forums about it, but I didn't have time to read it yet. I've been busy at work.
Let me pull a Bob Hayes trick and check something on the internet while I'm busy talking. AMA sells AMA Pro Racing to Daytona Motorsports Group, as I'm reading it on Dean Adams Superbike Planet.
Nice.
Blah, 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 blah. Holy smokes. They got Superbike, the Motocross Series, the Flat Track Series, the Supermoto Series, the Hill Climb Series.
My favorite.
Some kind of quad.
Well, actually, I got to say that when I first saw on any Sunday, I was a kid, and the mountain climbing thing was the most, that was the thing that really blew me away.
Yeah, I got to admit, the hill climbing definitely looks quite romantic when they slow it down and you see all the freaky bikes because nothing's stock, and it didn't seem to be like a, wow, it looks like Ben Bostrom won a race too. All right.
Right on.
Yeah, good for him. First career Daytona International Speedway.
Hey, listen, a listener wrote in an email. I know you've answered this question to me before, but I'm not sure if it was ever answered on the podcast. But he was answering if you guys stuck any special filters on the airbox while you were in the desert.
Nope, same stuff.
Same stuff?
Yeah.
So no issues with sand flying through the air. Most of it is on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes
sense. It's a race bike anyway. We're going to rebuild it after the race.
Right. Right.
One thing I did want to mention is the graphics look really bright because we're using some reflective stuff. It's really, really cool.
Oh, man. The photos look so cool.
Yeah.
I can't believe
the photos. No, the photos will be better from the race than they were from the test. Trust me.
Why, you guys changed the stuff around?
Yeah, we changed some stuff around. It looks magnificent.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Actually, the paint scheme is fantastic for your team.
Ah, thanks.
I love it. I love it.
You like red and white.
Well, I'm a big fan of red and white.
Oh, I got to give a special shout-out to Mike in Detroit, Michigan. Mike's definitely a big fan.
Of
the series. Of the Squadra della Pecorinera.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. So, big shout-out to him.
I'll be wearing my shirt on Sunday for you.
Are you going to go to the Ace Cafe in San Francisco at 14th and Mission?
You know, that's not a bad idea, actually. I wasn't thinking about it. Yeah, yeah. Why not?
Big screen.
Yep.
And they've got their food machines working, so you can actually get fish and chips.
That is a fantastic idea. I'll totally do that. I'll bring my son. I wonder if they'll let him in.
Anyway, I guess our time's about up because it's 3:30 in the morning, and I got to work tomorrow.
Yeah, Liam, thank you so much for making time.
No problem.
Good luck tomorrow.
All right.
Thanks a lot, dude.
No problem. Take care, everybody.
Take care. See ya.
This second call here that Liam did with Jules, it was after a hard day of work there on the second day of free practice, and Liam was obviously very, very tired. I edited this call a lot. I cut it down. I don't think it's even half the length that it was. It was a fairly short call to begin with, but now it's down to about 6 minutes or so, just because Liam was, frankly, he was out of it. There was sections where he sort of was drifting off and all kinds of stuff. So Liam, we appreciate your time on the phone and your efforts and all of that sort of good stuff, both Jules and Liam, sorry I butchered your call up so much, but it was just there was portions of it where it's flat out incoherent, plus we had a few quality issues and all that sort of thing that just kind of had to bring it down. But again, there's some good information in there. I didn't want to get rid of the whole call. I thought it was very, very interesting stuff, so here we go.
Moto Liam Race Weekend Day 2.
That's right.
Part 2.
Welcome back, Liam.
Hey, thanks, Jules. Good to be back.
So, what's up for today? What happened today?
Well, today was the second day of the beginning of the season, Saturday. Right now it's about 4:15 in the morning. We're back at the hotel getting ready to go to sleep. Today was free practice 3 and qualifying.
I noticed that Tony was still doing his backing in style riding.
Yeah, you can change the bike, but you can't change the rider.
Yep. How's he doing that? How's he feeling on that bike?
I think he's feeling two places better than Melandry.
Yeah, he is. Let's talk about the reflectives you got. You showed me an amazing photo of Alice. Is that how you say it?
Alice.
Bike. You guys put some reflective tape on it. It looks gorgeous.
We've custom made graphics for this race, which are, I guess, similar to the 3M reflective material, but in various colors. And I guess it's available also as rim strips that you'll see on street bikes. People want to bling out their street bikes. We thought with the new lighting system, it'd be nice to have a bike that would reflect light and really make the sponsor logos pop. So, our rider number is reflective, the logo's on the front of the bike, and this is an endurance racer type of thing to do, where you want to be able to see the bike as far away as possible when it's coming down the straight so you can get the pit board out. And it also benefits the sponsor greatly by having something that's a little bit more fresh and it's innovative, because we've never really done this before with reflective tape on the bike. So they look magnificent. You know, when you shine a light on it, it's great. You know, and I hope we do something like this for the rest of the year, because it's awesome.
And
you can see it. I put the photo on my website. If you go to www.motoliam.com, you'll be able to see the picture. It's nice. All the bikes are like that we've got. Kawasaki is running two small little reflective stickers on their bike, red ones for Hopkins and little yellow ones on the front fairing for Anthony West. I think Rossi's bike has also got a reflective number on it. I'm not really sure. It's been it's just been busy. Don't really have time to look at things as carefully as I would like.
Really cool.
Well, like we talked about last night, Lorenzo is doing quite well. He got the pole position, which is the first time in 10 years that a rookie rider to this premier category has gotten on pole in his first race. 10 years ago, Max Biaggi, also on a Yamaha, pulled it off, and he went on to win his first race. So tomorrow, all eyes will be seeing whether or not Lorenzo can do it. The Yamahas are looking fantastic on the Michelins, and Casey's also looking fantastic. So it's going to be a good race. Really excited to see what's going to happen, because a race of this distance, it's possible that Dovizioso can move in there. It all depends on how well everybody gets a good start and how well they can hang with each other in the opening half of the race. Then we'll see it stretch out a little bit, and hopefully there's a group of three or four guys up in the front that are battling for the win.
Yeah, I think if Stoner's going to get a good start. He always gets good starts, but it's going to be like if he doesn't get away by the first corner, I think we're going to have a good race.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, it's going to be a good race regardless. I don't think, I think it's quite obvious with the lap times that everyone's been putting out, not just the fast qualifier laps, but the race pace of several of the guys are all within the same bracket. So if they're anywhere near one another at the beginning of the race, they'll probably just hang together in a pack. And it's really difficult when you've got a couple riders there, for one guy to inch away, you know, at 0.2 of a second per lap. Usually they'll hang together for a while, and then one guy will drop the hammer and try and make a break, and the rest of the pack will either stay with him or they'll fade away. Knowing Stoner's style, he likes to just get away and run as fast as he can, as far as he can, and destroy the competition by as big of a margin as he can. and that would be quite a statement to make in this opening race. But Lorenzo and Toslin are looking fantastic, and it'll be nice to see what Colin can do.
Yeah, he's had good luck at this track before, so you know he could do well. I noticed from the onboard footage that the lights are actually quite bright onto the point of view of the rider. Have the riders complained about anything about the lights shining in their face?
No. I mean, you'll see a couple of the guys still wearing tinted face shields. It's the kind of thing where the corners come up so fast and the lights are still high enough that you never really have it where you're looking so far in the distance the lights are right in your eyes. You know, you're focused on your upcoming corner, and so your head is basically down. And it's not as big of a problem as I think it might look like on TV, even with the onboard camera, because the camera looks straight forward on the bike, the direction of the bike, and the rider's always looking somewhere else. Only on the straightaway will it be looking directly forward. I talked to Loris about it a little bit tonight, and basically he said, in his own words, it's not bad. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you guys.
See you, man.
All right, we got Jules on the phone. How are you doing today, Jules?
I'm doing great. Thank you,
yes.
Bob. How are you?
I am fine. I am dandy fine because MotoGP season has started. So, and I what a way to start, too. I was real skeptical about the whole... I mean, I've never liked Qatar. You know that. Mm-hmm. I think everybody knows that. I think the Qatar track, when you look at the layout from overhead, yeah, it's sure, it's interesting enough. But then when you consider where it is and that it's flat and that it's covered in dirt, I don't think we should go there, but we do. And they had our first night race. And like we talked about a podcast or three ago where we were talking about the lighting and how it would look, that alone was really kind of cool. I mean, that sounds a little shallow, just, you know, but I would have watched a parade of these motorcycles going around. And I think we got better than that. So I don't know. What do you think of so far about the race? Your initial sort of just, wow, you know, what do you think?
I think it delivered. I think it really delivered. It was there was an incredible overhead shot that Liam sent me, and it's this incredible image from the air. It's on MotoGP.com, right onto forums. Jim posted a version of it as well, but it's incredible. It's just a shot of the track at night from the air, so you just see the exact, you know, layout of the track. You see the pits, the hot pits, everything there, and just it was so cool. And then, you know, then from the ground, all the teams went all out to take advantage of the lights. Dantin put all of their sponsor stickers. They used special reflective tape. It pretty much glowed, and I think Kawasaki did the same thing. I know that's Rossi's numbers on the front. The 46 was done that kind of tape, and it looked, you know, pretty remarkable. And even on the video feeds, and the Ducati paint job, unbelievable. I mean, just like this golden red in these lights, it was beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Yes.
They did a really good job on the mirrors built into the light fixture, so that the light doesn't shine directly in the rider's eyes. As long as you're looking in the right direction. If you look back, you get blinded, I imagine, because these lights are so powerful. But when you're looking ahead, you basically see just these little spots where the light is coming from. And I was actually amazed that that the riders, especially at this track, which is a very flat track, there's only like one place where there's an elevation change, and that elevation change is like, you know, a foot, that the riders didn't get any kind of light fixation. But I was actually talking to Liam about this. He was saying, you know, the riders didn't have at first they had a little bit of an issue with it, but they were able to see the corners and concentrate on the corners, and the light didn't bother them at all, and it was fun. And it looked like fun. It was pretty historic, and, you know, it came off pretty well. I mean, I think that it was a temperature issue a little bit, as we kind of were worried about during after we talked about the practice, is that the temperature dropped something like 5 degrees during the race.
5 Celsius, which is what, like, I'm not
9 degrees
do the math
Fahrenheit,
now,
yeah.
But that's substantial in 1 hour.
Sure.
You know?
And it does that. I noticed, like, at the start of the race at least I watched the regular feed on speed with Nick Harris commentary, and they in their initial sort of pre-race blurbage, they had the air temperature is 64 degrees Fahrenheit and the ground temp is 66 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, you know, that's very close for starters. Normally you get a much warmer ground temperature than that because you got the sun shining on it.
Exactly.
And I know just from experience of the weather over there how it will drop so quickly. And it's also surprisingly humid this time of year. And it's almost like I don't know if it actually does come up from the ground, but it certainly seems like it's coming up from the ground. If you get up early in the morning, there's like almost like a crust on the lovely, lovely sand that coats the whole place. So at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, that's already happening. It's getting moist. So this could explain some of the issues that we saw in the race with tires and traction and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's about testing too. It's like you look at all the free practice, like during the early practices, we're all, you know, nobody complaining about tires, basically just fighting for real times. And then the late, so FP1, FP3, and the warm-up were all very, everybody was very happy with their pace. FP2, QP, and the race, people had some issues with the tires. Because that was the late, that was the, you know, 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock sessions.
You know, I almost wonder if they shouldn't have it later in the year, because later in the year it stays drier and actually stays hotter through the night.
Right.
You still have a huge temperature differential, but when you're talking that it's 130 in the daytime and then it drops down to, you know, something a little manageable, like, I don't know, 95 or something in the night, then it might not be so sort of drastic. I didn't see what the daytime temperatures were over this weekend, but I imagine they were probably in the 80s.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, first of all, they moved the Qatar race earlier into the season after the first season they had Qatar because it was so incredibly hot there.
Right.
That first year. And then I think that the schedule was already pretty much, you know, hard-coded, and they couldn't change it, but they decided to do this night thing anyway. I think in the future they should probably move to... I agree. And I think that they probably will. I mean, there's no reason to start the season in Qatar.
Right. Exactly.
They could go back to starting in Jerez like they used to.
Right. And have a more sort of a traditional start in a more traditional venue.
Yeah.
You know, a lot more excitement and stuff. I mean, you know, the attendance at Qatar still sucked. You know, there's nobody there.
Well, actually, I heard it was... Like an order of magnitude better this year.
Well, yeah, but you're going from what, 1,500 to, you know, 15,000. I didn't actually see attendance numbers. I probably should have paid attention to that before I said that it sucked. But
the assumption is that it sucked.
Say again.
The assumption is that it sucked. I mean, you certainly don't see. Like usually they will show you, like, as you go around the track, you'll see, you know, stands full of people. You didn't see that. So the assumption is that it was the same. But I have heard that the attendance was significantly better this year.
I can imagine. I mean, you know, I'd certainly want to prefer to go to a race at night rather than in the daytime over there. But yeah, you're not going to see hillsides covered with people for a couple of reasons, because there's no hills and there's no people. So,
nice.
But as far as the race was concerned, the first thing I want to talk about before we go into anything farther was Pedrosa's start.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I think here's my theory on this one, and you can tell me I'm wrong or what have you, you know, what your take on it is, that the guy actually basically did a jump start, but he got so lucky that it wasn't a jump start. You know what I'm saying?
You're saying that based on just the fact that you haven't, because I haven't seen any video of the actual, of watching him go off, so I can't say yes or no. I mean, it's a pretty interesting theory, but... you know, we had one of your listeners emailed you about
how jump starts are actually verified,
measured.
And we had a back and forth conversation. I was claiming that they got to be using some kind of electronic system, whether it's diagonal lasers going down the thing, or some kind of GPS or whatever. Turns out that it really is a video review. So
that's all it is, really.
Yeah.
You checked into it?
I asked Liam, and so you'll get that in the other call, but he wasn't sure, but he thinks it's basically they can't bring this equipment to every racetrack, and the racetracks are all going to be different. They're not going to have it built in necessarily.
No,
so,
correct. Yeah.
So and it has to be question, something that he thinks that they may use the GPS units that they use for the positioning of the bikes, because those are very accurate.
Yeah, that was Tony Pagliari, Tony Pags, and we had made a comment in a previous show about laser beams and all of that, because I seem to remember something about a seeing eye sort of a thing, not full on laser beam, but like a ding donger on a store's doorbell,
Right.
And as soon as the wheel moves out of the box, and I didn't know, and I actually looked in the rules and I couldn't find anything about it, but
well, I know that in World Superbike that second race in Phillip Island, when they all followed Corser, the five guys
five jump starts. Yeah,
they definitely said that even though he stopped, that he had to be penalized, because it's not like the marshals get to choose a system. Some kind of a system is used. Now it may have meant that it was a computer controlled system, or it was just the fact that they review it and there's, it's obvious movement, and once you cross the line, that's it. That's the rule. Yeah. And I don't care if you stop. In fact, it's, we already mentioned this, stopping may have been a really bad idea considering race one. But
exactly.
Anyway.
Well, in AMA, it was from the commentary. So, and I believe it was Greg White. So, I'm not saying these guys don't know what they're talking about, but it's not like it was from the official rule book. They said, if that tire moves out of the box, you're done. Basically, and I took that to mean that, if you are moving when the lights go out or the lights go green or whatever it is in your chosen series, if you are moving, okay, that's okay, as long as you weren't past that box, which would almost mean that you could sort of line up,
behind,
a little behind, yeah, but whatever. There was a replay of Pedrosa's start on the feed. And it, granted, I think it, if I recall correctly, it might have been slow-mo. It wasn't real time. But that guy was moving. He was really moving before Stoner even started moving. Hmm. I mean, it was a huge difference, noticeable difference. Even if it was slow-mo, unless it was like super mega slow-mo, which it didn't look like, he had – that either the most incredible reaction times, or he somehow or another managed to get like a third of a second sort of head start on Stoner
I haven't seen that video. I'll have to review it. So you're basically saying that Dorna let him get away with it because he's
I don't think they let him get kidding. Away with anything. I don't think he actually crossed the white line before the lights went out. I'm thinking that
We need a good conspiracy theory. Come on.
Good conspiracy theory. Yeah. He took advantage of the rules, mm-hmm. which says don't say, all they say is don't cross the white line before the lights go out. He was moving before the lights went out, but he had not yet crossed the line.
I see, yeah.
But so, as soon as the lights go out, he's across the line and he's already moving.
So I think next time is that someone should start way from the back and going and just hope that they cross their little box, as the lights go out.
That's called a rolling start, and that's what we use in NASCAR and Champ Car and IRL, and it sucks.
Yeah.
That's why I like the standing start. But whatever it was, no matter what, if it's Pedrosa's robotic reaction times, or if it's just sheer good luck, or if it's that he cheated, or whatever it was, he had an incredible start.
He had a great start. He actually outstarted Stoner, who is the start master.
Yes. He did by far. When you watch the thing, he is fully underway before Stoner even starts.
Wow.
And considering Pedrosa was eighth on the grid, which he's in the middle of the third row, And did you see him? He's weaving his way through, you know, the other seven guys in front of him.
The onboard footage was insane.
It was. It was totally insane.
No, so and, here, the thing is, I think that Pedrosa knows that he is not a aggressive passer.
Mm.
And he's one of those guys that has to be up front to win races. And when he gets up front, he can get away. But when he gets behind a couple guys, especially a couple guys that are not at all, afraid to bash some fairings, he has trouble getting up ahead. And that was actually true during this race. When we get past the start, we can mention that as well.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to throw that out there that number two was clearly he had a great start.
He had a great start. But I think it's important that a lot of people are talking about that start being fantastic, but I think it's also important to note that his entire race was great.
He had a good race. Got to be fair to the guy.
Yep.
But the whole number two thing is something – actually, I don't know if we addressed it, because when he decided that he was going to use number two because he earned that because coming in second in the championship the previous year, that, you know, there was a lot of talk on the forums and all of this about why he's doing it. He's giving up his, you know, his number that he's got a lot of sort of
capital – investment.
Capital invested in, of 26. And now he's number two. And, basically it was sort of a jab at Rossi is the kind of prevailing theory.
I can't imagine what else it could be. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm number two in the championship.
Not specifically at Rossi, although that's a nice side benefit, but in general, it's just saying, you know, like, look, I did finish number two.
Right.
In a field where there were three great riders.
Exactly. There were. And, you know, I kind of, in some ways,
19 or 20 great riders, but three really super outstanding ones. So.
Sure. And a half a dozen super, super good ones. And I kind of like that. I think it's sort of an old school sort of attitude. The guy that finished first last year should wear number one. And realistically, I don't see, you know, going down through the lineup, you know, 1 through 10, it's like I say, it's a little old fashioned. You know, these guys don't want to change their numbers because they do. There's a lot of marketing power established in the fact that Nicky Hayden is number 69 and Rossi is number 46 and so on and so forth. And so all those hats and shirts and all that they sell, you know, they're going to have to sort of, you know, scratch out those numbers. So
there's actually very few riders. There's been very few riders that refused to change their number. The only ones I can think of.
There's very few that refuse to change it to number one, but most do not change it to.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. The other numbers.
Two. Yeah.
And you know, it would be a little ridiculous. I mean, well, there happens to be a sporting series that does change everybody's number all the way down the line, and that's Formula One. But they also on that series. Numbers are not important. The numbers are small on the car. You're lucky if you can see the damn number, and they don't have the marketing power. And this is all part of the whole package that we experience is that, you know, this whole thing is about money, and you got to sell the hats, you got to sell the t-shirts, and to have the guy have the same number year after year does makes a difference. So in some ways, I sort of applaud Pedrosa for doing it, and in some ways, I think that I'm going to call him, you know, number two. So,
well, you know, I think for Rossi, for example, since he's the guy who, in the modern era, refused to change his number, it had nothing to do with marketing. I mean, it played into the marketing game. But
I think it had everything to do with marketing.
No,
dude.
No, he is a tip. He's a very typical Italian superstitious dude. He has so many superstitions. Everything from the way he gets on the bike. I mean, it also plays into his image. So I'm not saying he is like doing this completely because he's superstitious. But no, he has a lot of superstitions. Like when he kneels down in front of the bike, you know, that little like crouch when he holds the peg. Everything about him, you know, the way he puts the stickers on the bike. He just is that type of guy. And I think that it does. I'm sure his marketing guys don't mind it. I'm sure he doesn't mind it because he sees that money, but it's more to it than just that.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. I'll go along with that. I'm still a little skeptical. But that's
and the other champion that did the same thing was Kevin Schwantz. He didn't change his number. Because he, but for him, I think he he's never said it, but I'm just guessing that his championship was kind of I don't know, maybe he didn't feel like he quite deserved it because of what happened to Wayne Rainey.
Yeah, that would be a hard one. I mean,
I'm reading really into, you know, history. I mean, he's never said it one way or the other.
No, but I think out of respect to Rainey and all of that sort of thing, I think that's totally reasonable. I mean, it'd be nice to have Kevin on the show, and we can make fun of his clothes. But other than that, I think that makes a lot of sense. And hadn't really thought of that one actually, but. So, well, all right. Moving on from our start,
on the second
from
corner,
number two. Yes, into the exactly. You mentioned fairing bashing earlier on, and this is the
Before we go into, you know, I have to say that one of the most amazing things about this race was actually happened before the race, which is when the cameras were going along the rows, and they came to James Tosland. You know, he was in the front row, second place, third place, right? Sorry. It was Lorenzo. Oh, he was in second.
Second.
So he's in the middle of the row. The camera gets to him, and he is, if he's, do you remember this? He was kneeling on the ground and just in this incredible Zen state. He was staring off into, down the track, and the camera was trying to catch his attention. It was moving around him, and he didn't even blink for like 30 seconds or something like that. I mean, he was just staring off down the track, getting himself ready. I just found that unbelievable. Like, you know, totally getting into the zone, and it paid off. I mean, maybe this is the way he prepares. We've just never seen it before, but obviously it worked because he was amazing.
Yes, he did a fine job, and actually that was not shown on the speed feed, which we'll also have a little bit of bitching about later on. No, I missed that part. Okay. I heard you comment on his Zen, you know, Toseland Zen-ness, but I didn't realize quite exactly what you meant.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that's cool. You know, I mean, it shows you the guy's focused and everything. I mean, one commentary bit that came up, they said he lost 5 kilos of muscle mass. He's 10, 11 pounds. And that's a lot when you're already fit. Yeah, exactly. And especially, it's not like he just, you know, sort of cut down on the snacks. I mean, you know, this is real weight that the guy lost. And, you have to respect that sort of thing. These guys are serious athletes, and all the people that say, you know, oh, they're just riding a motorcycle around. Yeah, you go do it, dude.
And,
yeah. So, we got to go back to the start a little bit. That front row, Lorenzo, Toseland, Edwards. So, obviously, Yamaha and Michelin, at least at Qatar for that particular, you know, this particular race. There was some kind of magic going on because Tech 3, let's face it, last year they were, you know.
It's a totally different team, though. It's a totally different team. I mean, they have great rubber, and they have the only thing that they really had that was not top notch is that the motor that they're using is the spring valve motor.
Exactly. But you've got the privateer team using last year's motorcycle with, yes, great riders and this year's rubber and all of that. And they're on the front row.
Yeah.
Ahead of Stoner, last year's champion, as far as qualifying.
Michelin's always qualifying well. But
exactly.
But even when they do, Stoner was still... he was still doing great lap times. He said he actually complained that he never got to use the tire he actually wanted to use because they actually ran out of qualifying tires during his qualifying session.
Yeah,
if you can believe that, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, but still not. I mean, I'm just trying to say that you're right. Tech 3 is a new team, and I think that with Toseland Edwards, we're going to see some. That they are going to be a force to be reckoned with. I think that overall, this race, this Qatar race, is a little bit of a...
anomaly?
Yeah, an anomaly. There you go. That's the perfect word. and so we can't judge that the entire season is going to be exactly like this and all that sort of thing.
No, I mean, the temperature alone, I think, makes a huge difference.
Big time. But I still think, though, that that we are seeing a harbinger from Tech 3, and I look forward to that. That's kind of cool.
That's great. That's great. I actually, that mixed in with the amount of talent that is in the paddock this year. Boy, I just feel bad for the guys who are going to be 10th because they're still going to be writing their hearts out and doing a great job, and they're going to end up 10th in the championship, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, just the rookies alone this year are, you got, Lorenzo, Dovizioso, DeAngelis, and
Toseland.
And Toseland, yes, Toseland. I mean, that this year's, Rookie of the Year award is going to be earned. And, that's kind of a cool thing. So,
very, very cool.
Well, all right. Talking about the fairing bashing, do you think that's any sort of harbinger, to use that word for the second time in the call, of things to come? Or is it just that another anomaly to get that word in twice? Damn, harbinger and anomaly twice in the same call.
I think that one thing that helped with this whole race was that Stoner did not get off first, right? So he didn't just pull away right away, and then we had to relegate watching the race from behind. Rather, there was no clear leader for 8 laps. Rossi took the lead. Pedrosa was in the lead for
a
while.
Pedrosa had the lead, yeah.
Then Lorenzo got up there. Then Pedrosa got up there. I mean, Rossi got up there. So we got to see a lot of good fighting, and all of these guys are. Lorenzo is a very aggressive rider.
Uh-huh.
Toseland is an incredibly aggressive rider, which I was actually surprised because I didn't see him being an aggressive rider during last season.
No.
I kind of thought that he pussied out in a couple of contests, but I think he's really here to show that that this is the series that has the best riders, and he wants to be one of the best in the
and
best.
And he's got the chops.
He has the chops.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's great, and I think that we're going to see more of it. We'll talk a little later after we discuss the race about. Casey Stoner and how to beat him. I have a formula.
So
I think that we may see closer races. I mean, in the end, it was actually more of a runaway race than last year if you just look at the times, but we know that anybody who watched it doesn't feel that way because it was a very exciting race.
No, it was I mean, for the first and we talked about this a little bit in our before we started this call. The first third of it was just MotoGP racing the way you want it. I mean, it was just passing and aggressive and just freaking awesome. And, then it did somewhat sort of string out to a bit. It wasn't a full-on parade or anything like that, but, yeah, it started gapping.
Well, we had the parade in the first three spots, but there was a battle
exactly.
to the very,
exactly.
very, very, very last corner for fourth between three riders.
Yes, exactly.
What was amazing is just by half distance how incredibly spread out the field was. So we had, Stoner, Pedrosa, Lorenzo, Rossi, Toseland, and Colin Edwards, and then this gigantic gap. And then like Caparossi and Hayden, and it just really like I found that really amazing, especially the gap to Hayden, because Hayden did have a good pace. I mean, he was struggling, and he had to switch back to the 2007 bike, whereas Pedrosa kind of stuck with the 2008 bike. But
Hayden got screwed.
Yeah, but that gap was insane. It was really insane.
It was. And then there was a bit in the middle where it calmed down a little bit, but it picked right back up. You're right, it was not for spots one and two, but just the last few laps alone.
Or even three. Basically the podium was decided 10 laps from the end, but the fourth spot was, it was amazing. And you know, I have to say that we kind of benefited out of the fact that Valentino Rossi was in that fourth spot fight, because I had a feeling that last year we probably missed a lot of good racing because the big name was not in there in the actual race. So like we were watching Stoner going around, we were watching Rossi going around behind him somewhere. We weren't seeing the incredible battles that I'm sure were taking place between Caparossi and Vermeulen, who always seem to be together on the track for some reason.
Yes, they do.
And Hopper and all those guys that like were fighting for the fourth and fifth spots. Because you know, and so this is kind of a sad truth in MotoGP, is that Valentino Rossi has brought in an incredible amount of fame to the sport just through himself, and he does get the airtime, which means that if you're racing with Valentino Rossi, you will be on TV for 50% of the race.
Even if you're down there in fifth position and whatnot.
They're going to show him if he's 18th.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And they have. How long do you think that's going to last? How long can he make? I mean, he hasn't won a championship in a couple of years. How long until it starts wearing off and he looks a little bit like the guy that should have quit 2 years ago?
In terms of his popularity, I don't think it's going to wane. So I think that in terms of airtime, he's going to continue to get it until he retires. I think that each passing year, I think he's getting closer and closer to being relegated to a has-been. But I honestly don't think he's there yet. I think that this race, he was leading for a while, and whatever happened. His tires weren't as good as Stoner's, perhaps, but whatever.
Although he didn't make
good use of it, is really what I would say. And whatever happened, he didn't win the race, but this is a different race. I think that we're going to see something different in Jerez, and I'm never going to count him out.
No,
I don't. 10 years from now, if he's still racing, I'm not going to count him out, because he's really a very special rider.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jerez, I think, will be a completely different, a whole different ballgame.
Just in
so many ways. But it did look, you know, at first glance, and to be fair, Nick Harris even sort of said this when Gavin Emmett kind of mentioned it, that, you know, wow, did Rossi make a big mistake by going with the Michelins, or going away from the Michelins to the Bridgestones? That's
just crap.
Well,
that's crap.
Yeah.
It's way
way too early, exactly. And you have a race that's, you know, unusual and this and that. You can't say. But, at first glance, if you took this out to be foretelling the whole season and everything, then it would look like yes, but no, it's not going to be that way. Come Jerez, I think we are going to see different results. Will Rossi win? Yeah, no idea. But it's things are going to be different. I don't think you'll see him finishing fifth.
No, and it'll be five or six races before we find out whether he made the right decision or
correct.
Not.
You know? Yes, and it actually will be something that will sort of morph and change throughout the entire season.
Yeah.
To a point, especially as the Tech 3 teams get the pneumatically valved engine, which is supposed to happen by when did they say?
Estoril.
That sort of a thing that's gonna start having an effect, and that's just the Yamahas we're talking about. All these guys are going to be developing their motorcycles and a variety of things. We're going to get Honda's going to hopefully get on the ball. Not sure when they're going to be actually putting their pneumatic engine out there, but we'll see. And It's going to be the best season ever, Jules. It really is.
Wasn't Pedrosa on the pneumatic engine?
I believe he was actually this year, wasn't he?
Yep.
Or this time, or was he on the 2008 chassis with a spring valve? I don't know for sure.
As far as I know, he ran the full 2008 package.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All I know for sure is that basically, whether you want to say that Hayden got screwed or whatever reason, Hayden was on last year's bike.
Yes.
Yes.
By choice. He chose to ride the 2007. He had a choice.
All right. So then he didn't get screwed. I hadn't read that.
Yeah.
So, we pretty much covered kind of the first, you know, I mean, that was the exciting part, the fairing bashing and shoving and pushing and all that through the first couple of laps was just spectacular, the first several laps. And then the battle for, like we said, the battle for fourth with Dovizioso and Rossi on the last
There was a battle with between Stoner and Lorenzo for quite a while. Lorenzo would just not let go, and it was great to see. And one of the things that I liked hearing after the race was that Rossi said he gave Lorenzo a very nice comment. He was like, "I'm not at all surprised. The guy is an extremely talented rider, and he was not surprised that he did as well as he did."
That's a very gracious comment.
It's a gracious comment.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, there's not a lot of love lost between those two guys. I don't think that's a secret. And Lorenzo's a hard guy to like.
I know. I'm having a tough time, but I have to say that he pretty much blew me away.
Oh, he did great. He did fantastic. On pole position in his first MotoGP race at a weirdo track. And so on and so forth. I think that's worthy right there of, you know, he should get a BMW. They should bring another one out and something, because that's, I thought, was astounding when they're going down the grid. You know, I'm looking at the grid and it's like, wow, you know, look at that front row. And I was just shocked, I say. Because he did a great job. He really did. And I think that's a good sign for...
And he turned his qualifying position into a great race pace, too.
It wasn't just
the qualifying, which very often happens. I mean, you look at Edwards, you know, he had a great qualifying, but he did lose track of that group.
Right, exactly. Big time. I mean, he finished in seventh, and he was back... 15 seconds off the off of Stoner. He was pretty much way back there, and
more importantly, he was like I think 10 seconds back from the fourth spot race, right?
Actually, wait a minute. A gap here that I've got. Come race classification. We had Stoner, then 5.3 seconds behind him, Lorenzo. Then 10.6 seconds behind Stoner was Pedrosa.
Oh, my God.
Then
really?
It starts tightening up. Yeah, yeah. The first three spots were way, way separated.
Wow.
But then from fourth on down, it starts tightening up. You got 13.2, 13.3, 14, 15.
Well, except the eighth is like a minute behind or something crazy.
It was crazy. Yeah, Loris Caparossi, which, by the way, I want to mention real quick, that blue color, the Suzuki blue with Loris, I don't know why it is, but it doesn't seem right. To see the number 65 on that.
I know. I know what you mean exactly.
It was bizarre. It was a little strange.
Adjust your TV set, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, something was weird about it. I didn't like it. But, Suzuki's colors notwithstanding. There was that group of from third, but definitely fourth through seventh. Where they were fairly tight, but other than that, you know, there was a big ass gap,
right?
And there were some other, you know, startling results.
You start talking about Dovizioso. So let's just finish that.
Yes,
that's
exactly what I was going to say next.
That was great. Just
it
wonderful.
Was awesome. Yeah. It was fantastic. This is on the bike. This is basically, folks, this is the Konica Minolta team.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's the bike.
They're no longer Konica Minolta. Yes, I know. But
He did bring his team from 250s with him, his mechanics. So it
apparently,
like,
he must have brought everybody, dude. Because I mean, the only they still are called JIR, but you know, it's like this is a different JIR than we saw last year. Because
I thought they actually changed the name to Scott.
It's called JIR Team Scott on the official.
Really? Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I know. Because I had thought they too. Yeah, I thought they got rid of the whole JIR.
It's a rebirth.
Thing.
It's a completely different team.
It's obvious.
I'm not saying it's just because the staff got different. I mean, Dovizioso may be a big factor. He is a big factor. He's a fantastic writer. Uh-huh. I loved his writing in especially last year when he was fighting Lorenzo, and he was on a obviously not as powerful bike. So yeah, I mean. That's a great turnaround, and I think you and I talked about this before, maybe not on the call, but we were kind of hoping to see him up there, and it was great.
Yes,
and when I talked to Liam earlier, we were talking about just how great it is for a writer to beat Valentino Rossi in the last corner, and for an Italian writer, it must be just, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that he's a huge fan of Valentino Rossi.
Isn't he officially from San Marino? Or is that
No, that's De Angelis.
That's De Angelis? Okay. But you know, same thing. But, but I say in my centrist American way, right? But yeah, it is. The crop of rookies this year in MotoGP is astounding. I mean, you haven't seen this for I don't know how long, you know? And it's these guys are all champion material, realistically. I don't think that's going out on a limb to say.
And no, definitely not.
No. I mean, so Dovizioso finishes fourth. He's the only Honda that finished in front of him was Pedrosa, who cheated by jump starting. And this is on the bike that.
And like, Dovi's running, you know, the 2007 bike.
Yeah, he's running the 2007 bike, and even though yes, the huge personnel changes and it's a whole different team, different name and everything else. If you still sort of think of it that this is the Konica Minolta team by another name, they sure as hell did something. I mean, because, you know, they never got these kind of results.
They're looking to score points in the past.
Yeah. I mean, they sucked last year. But so that was really, really good to see. And especially, let's see, he qualified, where was Dovizioso qualifying? Ninth. Qualified ninth and finished fourth. So, you know, got picked up five spots. So.
Against some very tough competitors.
Yes, exactly. It was a good race. It really was. I mean, we always, you know, we're skeptical and stuff like this and everything, but the whole race was good. So, why don't we sort of kind of continue down the roster? Stoner, Lorenzo Pedrosa was on the podium. The Dovizioso fourth. We talked about Rossi, of course, was fifth. And the last couple of corners, we had not just a sort of a mild one or two semi-tentative passes. I mean, we had a genuine ding-dong battle between Rossi and Dovizioso. Those last, was it?
And Tosin, too, because Tosin said after
the race. Right there.
That
he was right
the
there.
Only
he was
reason
close
why
enough.
He couldn't get in there is because the guys were side by side.
Yes, exactly. And it did look like he was going to be passing Rossi there at one point. At least one corner, Rossi ran a little wide, and it looked like Toseland was gonna be able to capitalize on that, and he just didn't quite do it.
Yeah, you know, you could also argue that if he had the motor, obviously they had less power on the straight, that maybe he would have done better. I'm not so sure about that, it was close. It was close. I think that Rossi's pace was actually slowing everybody behind him down. Anybody who got past him got away pretty quick. I think he was slowing people down.
He just wouldn't let him pass him because he was riding so defensively. And he's going so deep on the brakes. I mean, you could just see it on the corners. It was insane.
Yep.
And that's classic Rossi.
Yep.
Just super, super deep on the brakes. And I think that's true. And actually looking, you know, just if you look at the numbers, you know, he was having his battle with Dovizioso. So those guys are right up there. But yeah, that's where the compaction kind of begins. And,
And it was like, well, throughout the race, because when he was leading, there was a train behind him.
Right.
Then people started getting by him. Anybody who got by him took off into the distance, you know.
Exactly. So, yeah, something to be said about. But the two bikes right behind him was in sixth and seventh spot was Toselin and Edwards for the finish. Also on Yamahas, and last year's Yamaha, that you know, if is last year's Yamaha faster than this year's Yamaha?
No. I'm not saying that it was like that obvious. I'm just saying that like he's a very defensive rider, so it's hard to pass, and that's what I was trying.
Oh, it's brutal. And it is. And you're right. But there was some speed differences. It wasn't like last year where we just saw Stoner's Ducati just. You know, hey, wow, he's gone.
Bye-bye.
You know, it wasn't quite that big of a difference, but the Yamahas did have a little bit of a handicap on the straightaway, for sure.
There was, I think, the biggest speed difference actually was Pedrosa's bike definitely had an edge.
I agree.
And you know, Pedrosa, I've said this before, and it may be getting tiresome, but he is not a good passer. He needs to be in front of people in order to have a good race. And he didn't do any real good passing on the curves. He passed all his passing that he needed to do was done on the straight.
You're right. He did. Yeah. So is he capitalizing on his lightweight and the power of the bike and just pulling it off?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So all right. Caparossi, we already discussed his number, just doesn't look right on the baby blue motorcycle.
But he was the first of the others.
Yes, he was. He was the best of the rest. And was it him? When De Angelis crashed out, he was battling with Caparossi, wasn't he?
I think you know what? I don't know, but I thought that Nakano and De Angelis were pretty much... like 12th and 13th. So I'm not sure.
Was it?
But somewhere else I noticed that somebody mentioned that Melandri gained the place because of De Angelis' crash. So De Angelis was obviously
and Hayden gained a place. It wasn't Nakano.
Okay, so no. De Angelis must have been ninth.
I think it was Caparossi. And he was he was having a very, very respectable race until he crashed. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I ever. I don't think I actually saw the true crash.
Yeah, they showed it briefly. He, you know, just nothing.
Just
nasty.
Lost the front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of typical, De Angelis. I was afterwards. You know, we have that tipping competition at Ride-On 2, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of people that, based on the points, picked De Angelis as the first DNF, which we give 2 points for, the first DNF. And I was like thinking to myself, wait a second, that's crazy. I've never seen anybody, so many people get the first DNF right. And I was like, you know, he is that one guy from the 250s that like you always knew if he was in the lead, you always knew that something was going to go wrong because he just has bad luck or he pushes the bike a little too much. He's also a really big guy. I don't know if you noticed on the photographs of the riders, he's probably the biggest guy in the paddock right now, and that Honda is so small that he may be having trouble with it, and he may be, you know, for him to carry the corner speed is a lot harder because he's got a lot more inertia.
Yeah, that would make a certain amount of sense. Yeah, sure.
But whatever the case is, he was the only DNF, which is actually nice to see. Vermeulen had to go into the pits, but that was a technical issue.
Right.
And he
right.
did come back out.
Yeah. I see I'm looking at the standings on the Ride-On 2 tipping, and I'm ahead of Jim Race. So
that's all that matters.
Yeah, exactly. Because I suck on these tipping things. And there's so many of these fantasy MotoGP, and Eurosport has a fantastic one this year. It's very detailed and very well done, and there's so many others, and I have some listeners that have sent me theirs, and you know, I set up a fantasy MotoGP, and it's like, you know, I don't have time for all this, guys, and I've been doing the Ride-On 2 one. I made sure I did the Ride-On 2 tipping, but I suck at that stuff, which is bad because it's kind of like gambling, and I like gambling. So
that's
I digress. Yes. Caparossi with his blue bike. Ninth spot, Randy Depunier. And Grace over there at Formula One blog specifically asked me, she said, so how about Randy Dupuis? You know, how do we think he's going to do this season? And again, you've got a guy on the crappy Honda team finishing ahead of the factory bikes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What are we going to read into this one?
Well, first of all, Dupuis has had an amazing pace in the preseason. So the fact that he finished only ninth was actually, I was surprised he only finished ninth. He's, you know, I'm not impressed by him because he's not the kind of guy who can last an entire race. And, you know, he gets off the bike a lot he's a bit of a crasher, and even when he's not, he's a fader.
Yeah.
He's still a MotoGP rider, so he's still a god. But I actually expected more. His testing times were so much better than Hayden's, and his qualifying wasn't as good as Hayden's, but he started off and right away like had a good start. So I'm not that impressed.
Okay,
I'm actually more of like depressed with where Hayden ended up rather than impressed with.
Dupuis. He did actually qualify a spot ahead of Hayden.
Oh, you're right. He was fifth.
Yeah,
and Hayden was sixth.
It's a little, you know, once again, I'm going to go with this is the first race of the season, and it's an anomaly as far as what we're going to expect out of Dupuis. I agree that, yes, he did have some spectacular times and all that sort of thing. And he's actually, although he is a bit of a crasher, he's pretty damn good rider, I've always thought. I mean, it's a little hard to argue with that what you're saying, that he's a bit of a fader as well, and et cetera, et cetera. But he shows remarkable talent. It's just he needs to sort of, I don't know, always have it on, shall we say?
Consistency. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
Consistency. There you go. I mean,
he has very little.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we have never seen him actually in a pressure situation, so we don't know.
Right. What do you think of his whole thing about why is he at LCR Honda right now? Did he... back on his opinion, refresh my memory.
I actually know very little about it. I mean, I was kind of surprised that given the history of Bridgestone to Michelin changes in other riders like Tamada and Nakano, that was a pretty silly move going from Kawasaki on the Bridgestones to LCR on the Michelins.
Right.
But, you know, I have no idea what the situation was like with his contract either. I mean,
exactly.
It's quite possible that they were so intent on getting Hopper and they couldn't afford to keep Dupuis maybe, that, you know, he had to start looking for another team.
That's a good point. I'd kind of, I mean, believed the official sort of line where it was like, you know, you got Hopper. Now Kawasaki has to decide between Ant West and Dupuis, and not so much thinking that Dupuis might be costing a lot more than Ant West, which is probably true. And I'd kind of thought that he just sort of lost out on the musical chairs game. But actually, that's a real good theory. I'll bet you, realistically, Dupuis makes a lot more than Ant West.
Yeah. We have other Australian riders. We have only one French rider, so that all those French companies are sponsoring him.
That's true.
You know,
I think that's probably true. So, but I also think that I won't be going out on a limb too much to say that.
Well, we have Gattoli too, actually. Sorry.
Yeah, that's true, and he's on a good team this year. It won't be going out too much on a limb to think that it's a possibility that Dupuis will somewhat deliver this year on the satellite, the clearly truly satellite privateer Honda type team, along with
Dovizioso.
He's not going to be...
No, no. Dovizioso is going to completely outshine him.
Oh, yes. Dovizioso will outshine him. But Depugne will do better than...
Than Kawasaki? Probably.
No, better than LCR last year. Better than LCR last year. Which was... Was that Tomata? Who rode on the LCR Honda last year?
It was Cheka.
Yeah, and I like Cheka. But yeah. I think Depugne will probably be able to, for a variety of reasons and everything else, he'll be able to better Cheka's performance. I'm going to go out on that limb.
Okay. You know, frankly, I actually don't care. Because because this is not an exciting rider to me.
Yeah, that's cool.
He's not. The only excitement he provides is I mean, somebody even said this before the race, like, boy, it really must suck to start on the same row with Depugne because you got to wonder who he's going to take out.
Wow.
Really cruel stuff. And he didn't go off and he didn't cause any trouble. But, you know, he has to have a reputation because there's history to back it up.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And he started fifth on the grid and finished ninth. So, I mean, he managed to slip five spots. Or four, depending on how you do your math. Inclusive or not. And next, Nicky Hayden. Same number of grid, you know, slippage. Started sixth on the grid, finished 10th. Didn't really have a very inspiring race.
We didn't really get to see much of him.
Didn't get a great start, didn't do a lot of aggressive passes or anything like that. Pretty much just rode around in circles for half an hour. Yeah.
45 minutes.
Yeah. Marco Melandri. Okay. Let's talk about guys that need to be talked about. How do you think it feels when you qualify 16th out of 18 and your teammate on the same motorcycle, same tires, qualifies fourth? That can't be good.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't be 100% sure that if everything is exactly the same.
Well, similar. Yeah.
So when we get to the end of the thing, I want to talk about Stoner for a little bit.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that you know, Melandri did better than I expected. I know it sounds ridiculous, but he did better than I expected because he had such a horrible time.
Uh-huh.
Both during the preseason testing and the free practice,
He has not come to grips with this motorcycle, and he did beat Hopkins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He scored in the race better than he did in any session in Qatar since the beginning of the testing.
Do you think he's going to do better at Jerez?
You know, he's the guy who likes certain tracks and doesn't like other tracks, and
yes.
I don't remember. Him, I don't think he's ever done very well in Jerez, so no, I don't think it'll be Jerez. I think we won't see him. I think he will come to life in Mugello.
That's a long ways down the road, though.
Maybe China, but
yeah.
I think
China. Won't be Mugello. Actually, he probably should do okay at China. But yeah. we've called him the random number generator before, which we stole from MotoGPNews.com, and it's true. He's just all over the map.
All over the map now. He's pretty
much at the bottom. But I mean, last year, you know, just never really knew with Melandri. Not a safe bet. 12th position, John Hopkins, who qualified in 10th, finished in 12th. I don't know.
In pain.
Yeah, exactly. And that, thinking about it. Yeah, the reading, if you want to believe the press release, and I think the Kawasaki press release was honest on this one. I've always liked the Kawasaki press releases, the way they write them. And, John Hopkins basically said that about half race distance, he says the performance of the front tire went off and it started sliding in the turns. I had no option but to hold the bike up on my knee, and that put a lot of pressure on my crotch. Which he actually says on my injury, but the injury was in his groin. And pain built up very quickly, and by two-thirds distance, it was excruciating. And I might have been able to ride through it, but I just ran out of strength, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's actually a fair, you know, that's not an excuse. That's a reasonable reason. So we're hoping for more from John Hopkins as soon as he finishes recovery.
I'm sure we'll see him. I'm sure we'll see him in the top five soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. I think that's real safe. He's a talented guy, and we had speculated that he's going to bring performance, you know, bring things out of that Kawasaki that so far they haven't had the rider that can do that. And I still think that's somewhat fair to say.
I do too.
Yeah. Shinya Nakano finished in 13th, started in 15th, riding the other Grassini machine. Then Tony Elias on the Alice Dantine Ducati finished in 14th after a, where did he qualify? 14th as well.
14th, so yeah.
Pretty much cruised around in 14th, yeah. And then Sylvain Guettoli finished 15th. He managed to pick up two spots. He's Elias's teammate, and he only qualified 17th.
One because De Angelis fell, and one because Vermeulen had a failure.
You know, whatever the reason. I mean, if you pick up a spot because somebody crashes and somebody else pits, then I don't think that, you know, you still pick up a spot. He managed to finish.
You stayed on, yeah.
He got a championship point, you know. Hey, one point. Elias got 2 points. Guettoli got one. Ant West, Ant West was the disappointment of the weekend, I would think, as far as
disappointment for him, of the grid. Sure.
What's that?
Disappointment for him, for sure.
Oh yeah, way. And you know, down here in this sort of the teams that didn't really have a huge amount of chances going on, and his quote in the official Kawasaki press release starts off with, "What can I say?" Obviously, I'm bitterly disappointed. Blah, blah, blah. Just wasn't all that confident. And he felt that he was much faster in some sections than Guettoli and Elias, who were in front of me, but he just didn't have the speed to pass. And as soon as we hit the straight, they cleared off. It's been a weekend to forget, but I need to put it behind me now and focus on the next race at Jerez.
It's and really been like 2 weeks.
Good luck, Ant West. Yeah, 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks from now. So... Yeah. Oh man, this is brutal. And Chris Vermeulen finished in 17th. What was his reason for pitting?
Front tire.
Okay.
It was chunking or something, and he actually had it replaced and went back out.
Yeah, and that's going to kill your race. You don't have time for that kind of crap.
No.
So, I mean, he qualified 11th, so finished 17th out of 17 finishers.
I'm guessing he would have finished somewhere near Loris.
Probably.
Interesting to see. I mean, yeah. Those guys really did a lot of racing against each other last year.
Yes.
It wasn't shown, but it was. But if you look at the timesheets and stuff,
right,
they definitely were together. And that now they're on the same team, same machinery, it's going to be even closer, I think.
I think so too. And Vermeulen's got a lot of talent. He's a good he deserves his ride and all of that sort of thing. He's just, you know, he's on somewhat one of the lesser teams, but they've had their shining moments. And I think that they're, you know, they will again have their shining moments. They'll have their day in the sun, so to speak.
Yeah, let's not forget he is a MotoGP race winner.
Yes.
Even if it wasn't arranged, who cares? Yeah. I mean, he did win races and he did score podiums.
Right.
And he probably could have won Laguna Seca in 2006, if it wasn't for his issues with the motor.
Right.
So, you know, that was not a wet race. The opposite.
Right. And our last guy to talk about, Alex De Angelis, who crashed out on the San Carlo Honda Grassini team. And he had that crash. He was battling with, which we argued about this, and now it slipped my mind, Cabarossi, right? Yeah, Cabarossi.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, whatever, lost the front. So we'll see again, because he's one of our talented rookies this year, and he'll be back. He'll do well.
He's a kind of an enigmatic talented rookie. Because
I agree.
Because his talent lies in chasing guys down and then not being able to do anything with it. And actually, I think Chris Vermeulen is a lot like this too. He needs somebody to chase to do well, mm-hmm. which means that it's very hard to win races that way. You just can't, you know.
Right. He got a fastest lap. If you go through the fastest lap sequence on lap four.
That's right.
Yeah. And in fact, he actually, that fastest lap time stayed for quite a while, until Stoner started knocking him out up there on lap 12. You know, everybody else's tires are going off, and Stoner's clocking out three fast laps in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a super,
very talented rider, and I think that we're going to see some very good racing with him and some of the other rookies. Like you said,
right.
this is the best. This is definitely since I've been watching the sport, this is definitely the season with the best rookies in it.
With rookies by far, yeah.
Yeah, the rookies.
Well, all right, there's still lots of stuff to talk about. There's little things that we kind of said we wanted to mention that we haven't got to yet, and we just don't have time, Jules, because if we're going to fit in all the other great stuff in this show, it's going to have to wait. But we've got still a couple more shows before our next race, so why don't we save some of those things for next time?
Sounds good.
Yeah, and until then, it's been great having you on the show. It always is, Jules. I love having your insight and your encyclopedic knowledge, which I needed to call upon when I did my call, which if you haven't listened to the Formula One blog, I was on Formula One Blog's podcast last week, and we talked about MotoGP quite a bit, and then they sort of did their own show about Formula One, and they had me on as a guest, and it was very nice, and I appreciate that to them. And there was at one point where I was kind of umming and eyeing and it was brought up that, you know, I needed Jules around to be my sort of human encyclopedia, and I was like, it's exactly right. So whatever. Thanks a lot, Jules. Do appreciate the call. It was lots of fun, and we are going to talk to you next week soon.
All right, ciao.
And last but certainly not least, we have Jules's call with Liam that they did after the race. This is back when Liam's back in Barcelona. It was, I don't know, Tuesday or Wednesday of last week after the race and everything. They're talking about some stuff. And it was this kind of strange. I didn't hear this conversation until a day after Jules and I recorded our own conversation. But it was kind of weird how some of the same topics kept coming up, where I would bring something up that Jules had brought up with Liam. So we were pretty much, everybody seemed to be on the same page. So there, you might find that there's a little bit of a duplication of some of the information, but it's from a totally different viewpoint because we're talking to Liam, who's actually there and working on the inside and knows what he's talking about, unlike myself and to a certain extent Jules, where we're just sort of on the outside and reading stuff on the internet and making it up as we go along. So it's good stuff, and let's go ahead and jump into this.
We have Liam Schubert on the line with us. Hi, Liam. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going, Jules? This is our wrap-up to what it's like to race at night in Qatar.
Yeah. The previous two calls, you were kind of on the edge of sleep, but you seem a little bit more energetic, I should say.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more cogent. Definitely being able to sleep as much as I have in the last couple of days has been great, and I could tell my body really needed it. I don't know. I'm back in Barcelona, and I'm stoked that there's a two-week break because even though preseason was too long, preseason blended right into the race because we tested before this race, and a couple of the crews, mine included, didn't leave after the race. So it just seemed like a huge 15 days outside of the house, longer than, say, two separate events. You know, if we'd raced 1 week somewhere and then gone somewhere else for the second race, it was that would have been a lot shorter feeling than spending the whole time in Qatar.
Yeah, because you never stopped, right? You were working the entire time.
Well, we did have a 3-day break, but because everybody was already on the night schedule, we spent most of the days sleeping, you know, and only doing stuff in the late afternoon into the evening. I don't know. I didn't really want to get out of that frame. But then we went into the racetrack 3 days before we started riding again for the race, doing revision on our bikes and take everything down and make sure everything was up to spec and just really take our time working on the bikes rather than like a real heavy push for 1 or 2 days. We thought, oh, okay, we have some time. Let's go in. We'll spend 3 days doing it bit by bit and it'll be better for everybody. So that was a switch back to the daytime schedule. And then for the night race of the three nights, we switched back into the nighttime schedule.
Right.
It's so strange for us, and everybody was a little bit nervous about everything, or maybe not nervous, but we just wanted to anticipate and be as prepared as possible. So we'd go into the racetrack, leave our hotel at about 2:15, we'd be ready to leave. That's 5 hours before the bikes hit the track, which is pretty early. I mean, if the bikes go on track at 10 o'clock in the morning during a normal event, we don't leave, you know, at 5 a.m. to go to the racetrack. So it gives you an idea of, we were spending some extra time there before and working on things. And the flip side was, if the bikes came off the track at midnight, as they were, we'd spend an hour doing a rider debriefing and working on the bikes, and then spend another hour doing small stuff. And we'd get out of the track by 2:30, rather than doing a full day on the bike after the second practice. We said, all right, let's just get back to the hotel and sleep, and wake up when we do and come in early. So it was kind of a bizarre schedule, and everyone seemed to be doing it. I mean, all the other teams were going in early and then trying to leave as early as possible and preserve some sense of normalcy. But it was odd. Even with a caterer that we brought from Europe, you know, to cook us pasta and meat, you know, normal dishes, we would get two meals at the racetrack. But you missed out on your final meal of the day, you know, where you finish working and then you want to go to dinner. You know, and if you get back to your hotel at 3 a.m, there's not so much you can eat. And that was a little weird, you know, having to think, oh, all right, I guess I'm so wired, I can't really sleep. I'm going to drink a Foster's and then try and go to sleep. And that was it. You know, you'd wake up the next day and think, oh, shoot, we got to get to the racetrack, you know. So you take a shower and you get ready, you head into the track. As soon as you get there, you're hungry, so you have lunch at 3 o'clock, and then work on the bikes, and then ride. And then at 10 o'clock, you have dinner. And then at 11 o'clock, you're riding again. And then, you know, by 3 a.m., you're back in the hotel. So it was odd. And as much as everyone liked it, I mean, the bikes really did look brand new on TV when we were watching it. All the paint was shiny, and the bikes really looked spectacular.
They look great.
But it's not something I'd want to do half the year, that's for sure.
Definitely. But in general, do you think that the event was successful in terms of running a night race?
I think if the goal was to hold a race at night, then it was completely successful because everyone was able to do it. I would say there weren't any crashes involved simply because it was, you know, lit up at night. And there were quite a few crashes in the test and a couple during the practice sessions, which I attributed more towards temperature. But that's not necessarily indicative of it only being at night. I would hope that if we were to continue with night races, it would be during a warmer time of the year, simply because, you know, you wouldn't want to wake up and hold a day race if it was that cold anyway. So
exactly.
I mean, to do it at night, I mean, it throws in the lighting factor, but other than that, it's still a cold, you know, ice skating kind of racetrack. And I think the cold combined with the dust that's on the circuit every day is it's not that great.
I was actually wondering why did they decide to run MotoGP last? I mean, obviously they run MotoGP last usually because that's the big event and you don't want anybody leaving. But it's interesting because I think that the 250s and the 125s are not as likely to destroy their tires because of temperature. Is that true or no?
Well, then you carry higher corner speeds than us. I think it would be even more dangerous for them if they were racing later at night when it was colder. I don't know if it had to do with television time schedules or what, but I think the goal was, oh, okay, if we're going to hold it at night, we'll try if possible as far as shifting the schedules whack that it throws everybody off. And it was fun.
What are your feelings like as a fan of MotoGP about this event?
Oh, man, what a banging race. That was great. Yeah, I really, really liked it. You got both sides of the coin for whichever type of racing you like to watch. If you want to watch really close racing, the first 8 laps were brilliant. If you want to watch somebody just put their head down and claw away from everybody and not just try and preserve a 2-second gap, but just drop the hammer and say, all right, everybody, I got a clear path and I'm out of here. You got to see that in the second half of the race.
And we still had some good racing in the back too. So
yeah. I was really glad to see that the cameras showed, you know, the battle for second, the battle for third, the battle with Rossi. It was brilliant. I really, really gotta say that the rookies and Pedrosa had a hell of a race. All of them were just amazing.
Pedrosa was definitely the big surprise for me, definitely.
Yeah, in a way, though, I got to admit, I felt a little sad. You know, one of my guys mentioned to me while we were watching the race that we were watching the changing of the guard, you know, and you got a definite feeling, even in the paddock, that there was a generational shift happening, that We're no longer in the era of the Rossi dominance. I mean, even though he hasn't won the last two championships, he's always been a factor in just about every race. You kind of get the feeling that his chapter is winding down, you know, that he's still going to be able to win amazing races and he's still going to be up for the fight. But with this next generation of young riders that has come in, you know, they're going to be the ones that are taking it to the next step, the next level. And I'm hopeful that Rossi can continue to grow as he has every year and maintain his competitiveness. But you have to understand that he's been racing in the World Championship for 13 years now, and he's never missed a race. You know, he started every single one. That's astounding when you consider the travel, the miles, the potential for injury. It's quite amazing. It's definitely going to be an amazing season for a lot of reasons. So I hope everybody stays tuned for that.
Yeah, I mean, Biaggi was the only guy who had that kind of a record. I think he still has the record for consecutive starts, but Rossi's closing in on it very fast.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed and hope he continues, because it's not like it's his last year or anything. We don't know. It's quite possible that he may find a renewed motivation, seeing how strong the rookies are coming in. It might cause him to put his head down even harder and really give it everything he's got. Anyway, the story of this race is not about Rossi losing.
No.
It's about Casey Stoner and his Bologna Bullet taking it to everybody.
And it's a story of Lorenzo, too.
Yeah, the race is about Lorenzo not making any mistakes. I had doubted previously whether or not he would be able to go toe-to-toe with the big boys, because they do race a bit harder in this class, I feel. And he didn't back down from anybody. You know, everybody got in there. Toslin got in there. And, you know, everybody was fighting for every position. So it was good to see Lorenzo not make any mistakes. Hell of a ride by Pedrosa to come up. That start was amazing. And secondly, for him to hang on with an injured hand, wrist injury, that was also quite amazing. So I give him a lot of credit, because just when you think the kid is injured and he's small, you know, he manages to pull out another amazing race, just like he did when he had the hole in his knee. Can't remember if that was last year or the year before.
It was last year at Sepang. Or maybe, no, maybe it was the year before, yeah.
So Pedrosa definitely came through. And really amazing last couple of laps by Andrea Dovizioso.
Oh, that was great. Right to the end.
Yeah. I really thought he was going to lose it when he did that final pass on Rossi. I thought, oh, man, he's in there too hot. That front's just going to let go. But it made it work. I mean, it was an amazing pass. I think if you had to lose from a pass like that, then that's the one you want to go out to.
Yeah.
Man, that was beautiful. Beautiful to watch.
Did you get to see any of the video of the race yet?
Yeah, absolutely. When the race starts, if we don't have to change the bikes over for climatic conditions, basically I just stand in front of the TV and we're getting it in high def.
There was I don't know if you caught the pre, like when the riders were on the grid, because you guys were probably busy, but there was a great shot of James Toslin on the front in this incredible Zen moment. I was completely blown away. I don't know if you saw that. The camera was moving around him, and like, he was just staring off. He didn't blink, like, for, you know, 30 seconds. The camera was trying to catch his eye. He just was staring off into space, getting into the zone. It was amazing. Really
well,
cool to watch.
It's your first year, and you're right up there on the front row, arguably one of the biggest races you've ever been in, because it's a change for him. I mean, yes, he's World Superbike champion two times over. Now he's in the elite level, the elite class. And this is his race to show that he's here, and he announced that he's here quite forcefully. I thought it was great. It's funny though, I've run into him a whole bunch of times over the preseason testing, because in Sepang, for instance, we were at the same hotel as Tech 3, and you know, oftentimes I was seated at the table next to him. I'm friends with Colin Edwards, data guy, and Toslin's data guy, and you know, so we'd be talking in the evenings, having dinner, and you know, say hello, small talk. And after the race, you know, I congratulated him in the paddock. He started speaking to me in Italian, and I had to say, whoa, hold on here, I'm American. You know, I have to So I'd have to use broken Italian with me. But it was a funny moment, and he had a great race, and he was really, really happy after the race, which was nice to see.
Yeah, that was a nice interview with him afterwards. He was very, very excited. And I think he's going to do really well once they get the pneumatic engine in Estoril.
Yeah. Oh, he doesn't do too well. I want my guys to get up in there.
Yeah, speaking of your guys, so what's going on?
I don't know. Let's see. In 2008, Elias came in 14th. Gintley came in 15th. In 2007, Elias came in 14th. Gintley came in 15th. So not much has changed except the bike colors.
Ow.
I don't know. You know, it's there's a lot of stuff going on that I'm not going to get into because I see so many different theories on the computers as to why these riders aren't doing so well and why is it only like this and how come Case is the only guy that can do it and it must be traction control because Rossi said this and so on and so forth. And I know that no matter what I say, I'm going to be misquoted or someone's going to extrapolate something bizarre off of what I say, that I'm not going to even get into it at all.
Well, I will say this. We had a conversation, you and I, at the beginning of last year when we talked about confidence. And I think that confidence and courage play a huge role in Stoner's ability.
Yeah, I would agree. And by the same token, if you get on the same horse and the horse doesn't do for you what he makes it look like it's doing for him, then that's bound to cause an effect also. All I know is that my crew and my engineers are working hard. I mean, they're always studying the data. We go through so many different changes and we're constantly working with evolutions of the bike. All we need is for something to click and then it's just going to be hang on, you know, and I'm hoping for that day and I'm waiting for that day. So I do my job and I try and keep my riders in good spirits when I talk to them every day. And I don't know. I mean, you get to a point where you understand, wow, we've been putting in a lot of work through the preseason and everybody at the factory is working hard on these projects. And you know it's going to be a hard year and you have a choice as to whether or not you can just kind of resign yourself and just say, oh man, this year's going to be tough. Or you just say, hey, everybody's doing their utmost and good things will happen. And you just, you know, I always look at it in a positive way, because if you don't, you really don't have any reason to be here.
Exactly.
If you're not passionate about the sport and passionate about what you're doing, get lost.
Good point, and I'm glad to hear you saying that after 3 years in the battle.
Yeah, this is my third year. This is my new pass, because we're actually on a video call.
Ooh.
With Stoner nice. On the front. So this makes three passes I have with three different riders on it. My 06 pass had Rossi on it. My 07 pass had Nicky Hayden on it. And this year features Casey Stoner on it.
It's actually kind of cool for you because you're actually in MotoGP during one of the most interesting eras. You know, a lot of history is being made.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, history is made every year. And I did take a photo of my three passes side by side because I like to do kooky things like that. And while I was looking at the passes, I got to admit, I thought, man, Rossi had five of these in a row. Five.
Yeah.
I mean, that's longer than I've been here. And he was at the top, not taking anything from anybody, just, you know, with his foot on everyone's throat. And it kind of ups your respect level, whether or not you like the guy, whether or not you care for his antics or you read into his press releases or whatever about the guy. You can say, oh, he had the best bike or he had the best tires or blah, 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 blah. You know, the bottom line is 5 years in a row, his name is at the top of the heap. And, you know, everybody was trying to beat him and everybody is still trying to beat him. I know for Dovizioso, it's probably a huge boost to be able to say, yeah, in my first race, I went toe-to-toe with the doctor and I beat him. I may not have gotten on the podium. I went toe-to-toe with the doctor. I think every time that someone's counted him out, he's managed to prove them wrong in the past. Just when Nicky Hayden was looking like he had a monstrous gap of points after Laguna Seca, the doctor managed to climb his way back up. The doctor was looking good for somebody the last race. So, and that last race, I think, was entirely on Pedrosa. I think he showed a lot more character than anybody gives him credit for. Because you have to say, hey, it's the last race of the season. You're not really happy with the bike or whatever, but you need to go out and win this race in order to beat Valentino Rossi for second place in the championship. And he went out and won the race. So, I don't know. I don't like to say I'm really a fan of any of the riders, but you know, all these guys, when they, you know, put their heads down and really start working on it, then things can happen. And, I don't know. It's definitely a very interesting time to see these new riders coming in and you know, to see some of the old guys going out. Was really happy for Carlos Checa and Phillip Island. I thought that was great that he managed to get on the podium with the new CBR. And also got to give a thumbs up to Chaz Davies, who's now listed officially as the AMA winner of the Daytona 200.
Yeah, that's right.
I had a chat with him earlier this afternoon. And we talked a little bit about it. Amazing. Amazing. I wouldn't have thought if someone told me last year in Sepang, oh, by the way, next year Chaz is going to win the Daytona 200. I would have thought, wow, really? so good on him for doing that. I got to say, it's pretty embarrassing also on the flip side of that to see that the AMA took so long to officially announce that, who the winner was. And also, I would like more information, a lot more information about the technical infraction. I honestly can't believe that an outfit like Arian that's been involved for this long and has won championships would be involved in something dirty. I think it's probably a miscommunication somewhere along the line. You know, maybe they outsourced their crank to get the bearing surfaces polished, which is technically within the rules. And maybe the bearing, the polishing place went ahead and polished the edge of the flywheel. I don't know, but my gut instinct is that they don't go out to cheat. So I hope there's not a lot of negative backlash on the industry and the sport as a result of this. It's just kind of a shame that it all went down the way it did. I think it would have been better if the AMA had said, hey, we're going to officially put this on hold while we deliberate on it and figure something out, rather than immediately say, oh, you're DQ'd for this, you know, without maybe having the full story from all sides. Because it'd be one thing if it was a surprise shock winner that, you know, that had never raced before and he came out and he blew everybody's doors off. But it's another one you've got, you know, someone that's been racing for a long time like Josh, and someone like Arian who's raced himself and continues to race with his small crew. It's just kind of a black eye. So
it's a shame, but you know, it's I think it's good that the rules are being followed. You know, you got to have that.
It's just technical director's brand new this year. You know, AMA itself is undergoing a lot of changes. So we'll wait to see, and I hope I don't have to read everything on Sue.
How are you preparing for the next race?
Well, let's see. Completed an order form for the factory. I studied a lot of the data that we've gone through and the pieces we've used through the pre-season, and done some calculations on what I expect to be needing for the next few races. Kind of juggled that with some new pieces for the bikes that are becoming available. And, you know, we're shipping pieces from the factory to the racetrack for Jerez. I mean, I get pieces at every single race or event that we go to, and you know, continuing to work on the system of communication between myself and the people at the factory so that we all have a clearer idea of what's going on.
Do you guys get data from Corsa about, like, the actual race data that they collect during the race?
I have seen it.
Well, mainly what I was getting at was that I mean, with the information, are the riders for your team going to be looking at that and saying, I need to adjust and figure this out based on...
The riders sit down with the chief engineer, or track engineer, as they call it, along with the data guy, and the three of them will usually sit down and study the data lap by lap. The rider says, hey, I had a weird lap here, or this felt really weird coming out of this corner, or the bike was shaking violently. And, you know, we'll look that up immediately in the data, or, you know, the telemetry guy will notice something when he's checking the data, and we'll bring it up with the rider, and they'll look at it, and they'll say, okay, this means this, or this is indicative of this. We're going to alter the bike in this way to take care of this problem, and so on and so forth. So my riders are pretty actively involved, I guess, in checking out their data, and they all have been interested in seeing the data.
Last year, you guys had pretty much the same bike. Is that true this year as well?
Yes. I saw something online. Somebody asked me whether or not we're running 07s or 08s. We definitely have 2008 bikes. I know because we built them in December, and as of December, they were 2008 bikes. And through the year, they'll probably change and morph into 2008.5, and then December this year, we'll build them into 2009s, GP9s. What people have to understand is that it is just one little factory, and they're trying to supply all four bikes, two teams, plus the tire test team, that test team is testing new solutions, and you know sometimes the factory team checks things out first. Sometimes we check things out first. It's just everybody's working towards the same goal, and the goal is to improve. You know, for sure, Ducati can't be ecstatic that three of their riders are towards the back of the pack, but I know for damn sure that my technical coordinator, my technical director, who's also the chief engineer for Tony Elias, is working his butt off for months now, trying to figure out how to make us go faster. You know, every time I talk to him, he's got a million things on his mind, and it really boggles me sometimes with how much he's got in his head. Normally, you have a guy that understands the dynamic of the bike, how it works physically with chassis changes or suspension changes. You have another guy that understands how the electronics package works and all the aspects of that. And in Elias's chief, we have a guy from the factory that understands all of it to a really, really precise level. I mean, I can ask him a question about a certain sensor or a piece to the bike and say, how does this relate? Or what is the importance of this? Is there something to be upgraded? Is this, you know, what are we going to do with this? Is this a problem? Is this this? And he can, you know, rattle off a history or a part number, and he'll call something up on the computer, and it blows me away. So I feel really lucky to be working with someone like him. I feel a little bummed out this year because my old chief mechanic, Lele, is no longer with the team. He moved to KTM 250. But on the flip side, on the plus, he did get on the podium his first race back in 250 in a couple of years.
That's right. Yeah. Good for him.
Big thumbs up to him. I'll be very happy to see if he can challenge for the championship this year. Be very, very happy. The only down about Yama, my other friend who rides for KTM 250, is on the other side of the garage. So if Lele wins, then that means for sure that Hero didn't. And I always have my fingers crossed for Hero.
Same here.
I hope you guys got an interesting look at what it's like to run through a night race weekend. I was pretty exhausted the last couple times I spoke with Jules. Now my energy level's back. I'm back in Barcelona. Still can't remember what I did 3 days ago. But God. Fortunately, I've got a notepad just filled with notes and notes and notes and notes. You know, I'll go through a notepad in two events, typically, and just fill it completely with notes and codes. And this was released to this mechanic. This was released to this bike. And I go through everything. It takes me a couple of days to go through everything after the race and file it away and record the information that I need to record, and it's fun. You know, I'm going to look back at these books 40 years from now and go, what the hell does any of this mean? But for now it's great, and I got my fingers crossed that the season's going to turn around for us. I hope that Nicky Hayden gets up to speed. I caught up with him at the mall. I think he's going to be all right once he gets things working in the garage. Everything's going to be fine for him.
So, you know, you're a workaholic, dude. I know you're a workaholic, but you should just take some time, relax. It seems like you're really, really stressed and long 2 weeks over there
in the desert. Have some fun.
Dude, we did. Me and the three Italians on my team went to the mall that same night we saw Nikki Hayden. And then we all showed them and we're like, hey, look, we all bought Casios.
Great, that's the highlight, eh?
That was the highlight. We all said, all right, we're starting this season off. Wow, the prices here are awesome. About half the price of what we could have gotten things for in Europe. So everyone just kind of went like, ah, yeah. And bought new Casios. So that was fun. And I ate at Applebee's.
Oh, my God. That's my son's favorite restaurant.
I've never eaten at Applebee's in the USA.
Oh, yeah. Every Friday.
Yeah, I've never eaten at Applebee's in the USA. But, man, every time I've been to Qatar, it seems like I eat at that place. At least once. Man, it's 1:10 in the morning roughly over here in Barcelona. And I think it's just about time for me to go get a beer.
Okay, great,
that
Liam.
That will be my relaxation tonight.
Excellent. Excellent. Relax, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot, man.
No problem, Jules. Take care, everybody, in GPOD land.
Take care.
And that is going to do it for today's show. Like I said, crazy long. This is the longest show we've ever had. I hope you enjoyed it a lot. Probably half of you are out there thinking, boy, thank God it's over. But in any case, it was good stuff. It was great talking to Jules. And I know that Jules also had a good time talking to Liam. So big shout out. Thank you again to both Jules Chisek over there at rideon2.com and Liam Schubert, who has his website at motoliam.com, where you can read about all of his adventures with the Dantine Racing Motorcycle Team. And all that good stuff there in MotoGP, and he's our American guy working in MotoGP. That's really, really great. We haven't had Liam on the show in a long time. He and I just haven't been able to sort of get our schedules to click. And so I asked Jules, it's like, hey, can you bail me out here? Because I'm just crazy busy at work, and what with Liam's schedule and my schedule and everything, we haven't been able to make it work. So Liam and Jules did that for us, and I thought it turned out really, really good. And again, thanks a lot. And if you didn't catch it during my chat with Jules, go ahead and listen to the FormulaOneBlog.com podcast. That's Formula spelled out, one, the numeral, and then the word blog, Formula One Blog, all one big long string, .com. And on there, you can find their podcast. They have an excellent podcast. That's Grace and Todd, a.k.a. Negative Camber, over there. And they talk, obviously, about Formula One, but Grace is also quite the MotoGP fan, and she always brings a little bit of MotoGP into their shows, and it's always very, very entertaining. And they had me on as a guest, and it was super nice. I really appreciated it a lot. I had a great time talking with them and kind of blathering on and making fun of Formula One and all kinds of good stuff like that. So check that out. That was in episode 43, but I do encourage you to listen to their other episodes as well. And Formula One opener, I believe, is this weekend. So if you're a Formula One fan at all, or you've got TiVo or whatever it is, how you get your Formula One, that's coming on this weekend. And other than that, why don't we go ahead and sign off instead of making the show any longer, and we will talk to you again next week when we've got more stuff to talk about. There's still a whole lot of good news and opinion and information and chit-chat about the MotoGP 2008. Yeah, that's it, season that we got going on right now. I told you the show was ridiculously long, but since you went ahead and stuck around all the way till the end, why don't I go ahead and tell you that MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.